So I'm going to read all of Psalm 55 on page 575. Listen to my prayer, O God. Do not ignore my plea. Hear me and answer me. My thoughts trouble me, and I am distraught at the voice of the enemy, at the snares of the wicked, for they bring down suffering upon me and revile me in their anger. My heart is in anguish within me. The terrors of death assail me. Fear and trembling have beset me. Horror has overwhelmed me. I said, "Oh, that I had the wings of a dove, I would fly away and be at rest. I would flee far away and stay in the desert. I'd hurry to my place of shelter, far from the tempest and storm. Confuse the wicked, O Lord, confound their speech, for I see violence and strife in the city. Day and night they prowl about on its walls. Malice and abuse are within it. Destructive forces are at work in the city. Threats and lies never leave its streets. If an enemy were insulting me, I could endure it. If a foe were raising himself against me, I could hide from him. But it is you, a man like myself, my companion, my close friend, with whom I once enjoyed sweet fellowship as we walked with the throng at the house of God. Let death take my enemies by surprise. Let them go down alive to the grave, for evil finds lodging among them. But I call to God, and the Lord saves me. Evening, morning, and noon I cry out in distress, and he hears my voice. He ransoms me unharmed from the battle waged against me, even though many oppose me. God, who is enthroned forever, will hear them and afflict them, men who never change their ways and have no fear of God. My companion attacks his friends. He violates his covenant. His speech is smooth as butter, yet war is in his heart. His words are more soothing than oil, yet they are drawn swords. Cast your cares on the Lord, and he will sustain you. But he will never let the righteous fall. But you, O God, will bring down the wicked into the pit of corruption. Bloodthirsty and deceitful men will not live out half their days. But as for me, I trust in you."
Phil. Well, thanks, Simon, and may I add my welcome to you all this lunchtime. And as Simon said, we're beginning a new series of talks looking at this book in the Bible, the Psalms. We're going to have two talks this week and next week, and then we'll be coming back to the series later in August. And the series is called Putting Your Life in Perspective, because as we look at the Psalms, we're going to see the difference it makes to know and to trust the promises of God's word in life today. So our first psalm we're going to be looking at today, as we just had read, is Psalm 55. And the issue that this psalm addresses is the anguish and injustice of opposition from a close friend or companion. If you've got your Bibles open in front of you, it's page 575. And because we can see this straight away, just looking at verse 12. Verse 12, "If an enemy were insulting me, I could endure it. If a foe were raising himself against me, I could hide from him. But it is you, a man like myself, my companion, my close friend, with whom I once enjoyed sweet fellowship as we walked with the throng at the house of God." This psalm was written by King David. David was God's king ruling over the people of Israel 1,000 years or more before Jesus. And we see here that he is under attack, not just from any old enemy though. Those words again in verse 13, "But it is you." You can imagine him as he looks at his attacker in the eye, the confusion, the anguish, trying to see through the now cold stare to see what has changed and capture a glimpse of the old companion he knew. This was someone he shared sweet fellowship with, now against him. And it may be, as you look at these verses, you can think of experiences you've had like this, perhaps situations you're facing now. It may be, though, that some of us aren't experiencing situations quite like this. Nevertheless, as we look at Psalm 55 today, I want to suggest it is for all of us, because it leaves us with two big claims. The first claim is that although all of us are likely to experience something of the anguish David does, If we're Christians here today, we must expect to experience this kind of thing because of the very fact we're Christian. The second, perhaps even bigger claim, is that Psalm 55 shows us that the resolution to the anguish and injustice of betrayal or opposition from someone close is only possible for the Christian. Now, perhaps you're thinking that is too big a claim to make. But as we look at Psalm 55, I hope you'll see that it's justified. And therefore, it gives great hope for the Christian who can expect to face this kind of opposition. And for those looking into Christian things here today, I hope it will show you that God's words really do make sense of this world. So we're going to be looking at those two claims in our 2 points today on the handout. And the first one there is the problem. Expect the anguish and injustice of betrayal. What we see in this psalm as we read it is just the extent to which David's situation causes him anguish and a sense of right anger at the injustice of it all. And these are emotions that, as we look at them, connect very close to home. This psalm was probably written as David fled from his capital city, Jerusalem, as his own son, Absalom, led an uprising against him. You can read about that in the book of 2 Samuel, if you'd like to. And this was his son who he'd provided for, who lived in his home. And verse 14 shows us who had walked together with him in the throng at the house of God. They'd shared sweet times together, conversations, perhaps worshipping God together. But now Absalom has David on the run, and it's a cause of great anguish. So just look at the language in the psalm. Look at verse 2. Hear me and answer me. My thoughts trouble me, and I am distraught at the voice of the enemy, at the stares of the wicked, for they bring down suffering upon me and revile me in their anger. This situation is getting at him in his mind. His thoughts are troubled. It's hard for him to think about anything else except the words Absalom has spoken against him. They seem to be words of mockery. Do you see that in verse 3? They revile me in their anger. And they're causing him real suffering. And not only that, but it's as if the image of those eyes staring at him, cold, that look of disgust etched in his mind, the stares of the wicked. David goes on, verse 4 and 5, to express the mental stress of it all. My heart is in anguish within me. The terrors of death assail me. Fear and trembling have beset me. Horror has overwhelmed me. It's the language of feeling oppressed and crushed. Horror has overwhelmed me. It's causing him physical symptoms. Fear and trembling beset me. Some of us here may know that feeling. Others may know those who feel or have felt like this. And as David thinks about it, he just wants out. Look at verse 6. He says, oh, that I had the wings of a dove, I would fly away and be at rest. I would flee far away and stay in the desert. I would hurry to my place of shelter, far from the tempest and storm. David wants to be somewhere else. If only he had wings to fly away to a peaceful place where it's all gone. You see, David is pouring out in this psalm the emotion of the anguish of opposition from a close companion. I wonder if these are experiences and feelings we can relate to. If not personally, are they experiences that people we know are wrestling with? I think this psalm actually speaks very sharply into city life, into the politics, into the power play of the workplace. We may not find ourselves being hunted down by our own son with designs for our kingdom, but perhaps closer to home, it's the peer in our firm who has designs on promotion. There's someone we've worked closely with in the past, and you seem to get on well, but it now seems that they've got it in for you as they speak unfairly against you to your peers or to management. In fact, it's what's happening in verse 20 and 21, isn't it? Look at those verses for a moment. My companion attacks his friends. He violates his covenant. His speech is smooth as butter, yet war is in his heart. His words are more soothing than oil, yet they're drawn swords. It's verbal attack, and it can be very stressful. It feels full of uncertainty as this power play and politics unfold around you. And so we feel like David, don't we? My thoughts trouble me, and I'm distraught at the voice of the enemy. My heart is in anguish within me. Oh, that I have wings of a dove, I would fly away and be at rest. But it's not just the anguish. David also feels a sense of right anger at the injustice of it all. Look at verse 9. He cries out to the Lord, "Confuse the wicked, O Lord, confound their speech, for I see violence and strife in the city." He wants it all stopped. Stop their speech. Confuse the opposition. And in the midst of the stress of it all, he even wants them dead. Verse 15. "Let death take my enemies by surprise. Let them go down alive to the grave, for evil finds lodging among them." Is he overreacting here? Well, in David's case, the cry seems justified. It's treason against the king. So amidst the anguish of the cry, amidst all the anguish is this cry for the end of injustice. This psalm really captures the mix of emotions, doesn't it? As maybe a colleague speaks unjustly against us and we want justice done. Stop the words. Stop them. This is a psalm that hits close to home. And whilst it's likely that we will face these kind of situations to a greater or lesser extent, whether we're Christian here today or not, this psalm describes an experience that the Christian must expect in life because of the fact they are Christian. So you'll see a second subpoint on the sheet there. Christian, expect this. Now you may be aware that although there are a wide variety of psalms in the book of Psalms, they're all written into a context. And this context is given by Psalms 1 and 2. So if you bear with me for a moment, come back to page 543. Flip back to page 543 for a moment, and we'll look at just at Psalm 2 briefly. So Psalm 1 and 2, unlike Psalm 55, they have no title. And that's because they operate here at the beginning of the book as an introduction, setting the context into which the Psalms can be read. And a key aspect of that context is the issue that the nations are opposed to God's anointed king. So that's the start of Psalm 2, verses 1 and 2. "Why do the nations conspire and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth take their stand and the rulers gather together against the Lord and against his anointed one." And so as we read through the Psalms, we find this theme coming up again and again. Opposition to God's anointed one, his anointed king. And in this case, it's King David. But actually, it's not just an issue in the Psalms. It's a pattern that continues right through the Bible as the nations oppose God's ultimate, eternal king, Jesus. Indeed, like David, Jesus faced betrayal at the hands of his companion, one of the 12 close disciples, Judas. The anguish and the just anger we see in God's King David here, it gives us a window, if you like, into the anguish and the just anger of God's eternal King as he was betrayed into the hands of the religious authorities and crucified. And because this is the pattern for God's King, it's also the pattern for the followers of the King. So you'll see I've put some verses from John's Gospel on your handouts. This is where Jesus just makes this explicit. Jesus says in John's Gospel, "If the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first. Remember the words I spoke to you. No servant is greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you also." You see, Psalm 55 is relevant to all, but if you are with God's King, if you're a Christian trusting Jesus, it is written to equip you for the kind of opposition you should expect to encounter at some stage. And I think this is actually a great comfort to know, isn't it? Because it means when we experience this kind of opposition to a greater or lesser extent, or when we know others who are going through it, we aren't left thinking something's gone wrong with our Christian walk. Instead, we're equipped to deal with it. Look with me again at verse 13. "But it is you, a man like myself, my companion, my close friend." See, perhaps since you've become a Christian, some family members have really opposed it. It's painful to experience the mockery and the cutting remarks from those who are close. Perhaps as the relationship has now changed, it's on your mind. You used to feel so close, but now they seem to be pulling against you. This doesn't mean that something has gone wrong in your Christian walk. Or maybe it's a colleague. They seemed really friendly, even interested to hear about your faith, but now it seems that behind your back they've been spreading hurtful gossip. Maybe it's a spouse. Maybe it's someone who once called themselves a Christian. That seems to be what's described in verse 14, "with whom I once enjoyed sweet fellowship." as we walked in the throng at the house of God. Maybe you used to pray together. Maybe you read the Bible together. But now they don't want to speak to you. It's in line with expectations. Psalm 55 speaks of experiences that Christians must expect because they are Christian. So the question really is, well, what do we do with situations like this when we experience this anguish and injustice? And so this is our second point, the resolution. Cast your cares on the Lord. See, in this psalm, David is modelling to us how to deal with the anger and injustice at these kind of situations. And at the heart of the resolution is verse 22 and 23. That's just over the page on 576. Verse 22, David writes, "Cast your cares on the Lord, and he will sustain you. He will never let the righteous fall. But you, O God, will bring down the wicked into the pit of corruption. Bloodthirsty and deceitful men will not live out half their days. But as for me, I trust in you." See, David's resolution is to trust the Lord, although through the situation, and to cast his cares on him. Well, why is that the right response? Why is it the right response to trust the Lord? Why does that bring resolution to the anguish and injustice? Well, it's because of the Lord's character and what he has promised. So we'll look at the promises. That's verse 22 and 23. God's promise to the Christian is that whatever the situation is or opposition we are facing, he will sustain us through it. He will not let the righteous fall. He will deliver justice. So what does that mean, to sustain us? Well, for David, it meant rescue in the world. The Lord would sustain him and ransom him unharmed from the battle back to his city in Jerusalem. But for the Christian today, it means that, like Jesus, who trusted himself to the Lord, who sustained him through suffering and even death on a cross, to raise him up to rule over all in his eternal city, the Lord will sustain his people through injustice and betrayal, now to join Jesus in his eternal new city. It's like the image of a father closely leading a toddler by the hand, always ready to catch them if they stumble, never letting them fall, ensuring they will make it to the end, a wonderful future hope. I wonder if this is a bit of a surprise to us. Perhaps it's even a disappointment, because you see, the resolution is not a promise that the situation will be fixed just like that. Indeed, it may be that actually the situation never fully goes away. Relationships with family might remain difficult for a long time. Perhaps there'll always be a tension there. Maybe colleagues will persist in their opposition. But if we pause on this for a moment, this psalm gives us even better news, doesn't it? Because these promises give us a new perspective on the situation. No longer does this situation dominate, because the Lord promises to sustain me through it now in order to get me to the new creation. To put it another way, your opponent can't touch you if you're trusting Jesus. They can mess up your career, they can revile you, they can harm your professional reputation, but they cannot change the certainty of your future hope. He will never let the righteous fall. And so I think as we realise this, it sort of clears the mind, doesn't it? It puts the issue in its proper place, no longer dominating everything, but actually as part of the normal Christian experience which the Lord will guide us through safely. More than that, verse 23 shows us that the Lord will deliver justice. You, O God, will bring down the wicked. Rather than have to let the anger and the resentment against an individual simmer inside us and lead me to vengeful thoughts or actions, I can trust that the Lord will deliver justice on his day of judgment. And so I can cast that burden on him too. Cast your cares on the Lord because of his promises, but also because of his character. See, David casts his care on the Lord because he trusts him. He trusts him to deliver his promises. And in this psalm, he models to us, if you like, what it might look like to approach the Lord and do this, to cast our cares on him. And I just think it's really refreshing, actually. There's no need to put on a face. David is not trying to hide anything. He's being honest. He's laying it all out before the Lord. Perhaps we find it hard to approach God like David does, because we wonder, well, can God be trusted? Can I really give this to him? In the workplace, we get used to being let down, can't we? When perhaps we delegate things, but we still end up kind of worrying about whether it's going to be done to the quality or the time that we need. Perhaps we can feel like that with God. But actually, we can cast the whole situation on him and rest in the knowledge he will sustain us through it. Look at David's understanding of God. It's back over the page in verse 16. See, David prays. He says, I call to God and the Lord saves me. Evening, morning and noon I cry out in distress and he hears my voice. He ransoms me unharmed from the battle waged against me, even though many oppose me. God, who is enthroned forever, will hear them and afflict them. You see, David knows that God will hear the call of his people. And in verse 19, it shows us that God will hear even the voice of the opponents. And so we can be confident as we cast our burden on the Lord that he will hear us to sustain us and he will hear to deliver justice. And I take it this is something we are to do over and over again. I don't know if you noticed there, but in verse 17, David does it evening, morning and noon. So I don't think this is a call for us to be stoic or to have stiff upper lips and sort of just cast it to the Lord once and feel bad if we ever feel anguish again. No, actually, it's when we experience the anguish and injustice, we can pour out the situation to him, remember his promises, and so find relief from it as we see the unshakable future hope that we have. So as we conclude this lunchtime, if we're a Christian here today, I guess this is a psalm that calls us to remember our future hope, to expect experiences like this, but as they come, to cast our cares on the Lord and trust him through it, knowing he will bring justice, he will sustain you now, and he will get you to his new creation, which is far better. But perhaps you're looking in on Christian things here this lunchtime. Well, can you see that without this future hope, there can ultimately be no resolution to the anguish and injustice of betrayal? You see, if this world is all there is, if there's no future hope, then the only way to deal with it is to try and fix it yourself. Well, how do you fix the anguish? Well, if you do not have the future hope, it's verse 6 to 9, isn't it? Oh, that I had wings of the dove to fly away. Try and get away from it. Move jobs. Live for the holidays. Escape in TV box sets. But it's only temporary until the next time it happens. How do you deal with the injustice? Well, if you don't have a future hope, fight back. Get revenge. But this can become all-consuming, can't it? It can dominate your thinking. And is it ever really possible to achieve it? But I wonder if actually many people are more pragmatic than that. We realise we need to just get on with life, don't we? So we shrug off the anguish and the injustice. We push it down deep and we stop thinking about it. We just get busy. We keep distracted. But ultimately, it's no resolution. And in fact, actually, if we start to think about it again, I wonder if that is the route to becoming cold and joyless and cynical. You see, resolution to the anguish and injustice of betrayal is wonderfully available for those who cast the situation on the Lord, trusting him to sustain you now and to deliver you to eternal peace and justice. Well, let me finish with a prayer. Our Lord God, we thank you that you hear our calls to you and you know our situations. And thank you that whatever the anguish and injustice we may face, especially from those close to us, we can trust it to you knowing that ultimately you sustain your people to your eternal new city and will deliver perfect justice. And so we ask that knowledge of this would help us to cast these cares on you in the day-to-day life we face in the city and at home, and so find relief from anguish and anger as we see the unshakable future hope we have in you. Amen.